national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, to Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland.
WMFO 91.5. Good morning, Boston. DJ D in studio here, right in Studio A, with the Boston Women Rock producer, Michael Stewart. What's going on, my brother?
Hi, we are waiting for the call for Christy Oman. She should be calling in about a minute or so. And we will be proceeding with that interview very shortly. Excuse me. How you doing today, Darryl?
I'm hanging in there, yeah, going along. I just relieved my two brothers, Nick and Spence. Yeah, Soy Bus, Hold the Dairy. Those guys are the greatest guys on campus, I'm telling you right now.
And I'm glad you pay them to say that.
I know, I do, yes.
In the interim, until she calls, we're going to talk about the WMFO Live Day that's coming up on May the 4th. That's Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., going to 5 a.m., and basically, it's going to be a day, all the event. Oh, here comes our call. Hello.
Yeah, hi, this is Christine Ullman.
Hi, Christine. How you doing? This is Mike Stewart from Boston Rock and my co-person right over here, Daryl Fedorchak. I'm sorry. I'm a little,
yeah, I really impressed him, Christine, apparently, huh?
How are you both?
Good. I just came from physical therapy, and I'm old, and he has no excuse.
Well, there you go.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm a little dry in the throat here. So, Christine, you have a gig coming up at Nine Walls, which is a fairly new venue in Beverly.
Yeah.
And can you give us a little background on that? You're going to be playing with John Butcher, who's a longtime Boston favorite and recording artist.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the gig is Christine Ullman and Rebel Montez, which is my band, and our special guest will be, in fact, John Butcher. And John and I will be doing some we're going to do some duets that people have never heard before, some songs that people have never heard before, and then sort of a mixture of my originals, some of his originals, and it's really going to be great. We're both sort of blue-eyed soul singers, so... And there'll be a lot of guitar action. There's a cat named Cliff Goodwin who comes from Worcester. He's the guitar player in Rebel Montez, so he'll be there. And it's going to be, we're calling it a tent show revival, you know, because it really is going to be pretty much of a raise the roof kind of a night. And Nine Wallace is a listening room. All the seats are very close to the stage. So people should come and expect to just see a great show, you know, listen and... some stuff that they've never heard either of us do before.
You know, it is a new room, and I'm hoping to get up there soon to see it. And it's always good to have a new place to feature music in the Boston and vicinity area. Now,
I think,
yeah, go ahead.
To have a new place anywhere. Yeah, it's wonderful. Really exciting.
Yeah, not to go off on a tangent, Boston's had its ups and downs with venues there, but we have a really great bunch of them now. A lot of new ones have just come on, and we have Jungle and... all kinds of places, so that's great. Now, I got to ask you a question. Your guitarist looks very familiar. Has he played on a local TV program here?
Yes, he played on something called Community Audition.
That's it.
Not on anymore, but it's on for a number of years.
Yes. That's why I recognized him.
Yes.
So, this gig here is going to be like your first time doing this here, and you're featuring a lot of different people. And, some of the people have all kinds of different lineages. I see people that play with Joe Cocker and Robert Palmer. And I want to give us a little fill in the rest of the musicians that are going to be on that gig with you.
Yeah, well, the members of Rebel Montez that will be with me on the 26th are all from largely out of the Massachusetts scene. Cliff Goodwin is from Worcester. He played at one point with Joe Cocker and did some recording, I think, with Robert Palmer. Didn't play live with Robert Palmer. Wilk Janandez, the bassist, is really the go-to bassist in the blues community in Boston and many other places, too. He's played with Dennis Brennan. You know, Wolf's been around, very, very hugely respected.
Yes.
And the drummer, Lauren Entress, comes out of the Boston scene as a producer and a drummer. Worked with Laurie McKenna for years and then with... Duke Levine for years.
Yeah.
So really,
That's a stellar lineup. I mean, Duke Levine lives in the same city as me. Great, great stuff. Super, super nice guy. One of the nicest persons in the scene. You know, you got a great lineup of people that are going to be supporting
you. Yeah.
John Butcher, what can we say about him? I mean, you know, when I started going to the clubs in the 70s and 80s, he was right there. He had another band, Joanna Wild, and then he did the John Butcher Axis, and he was signed, and albums out. Fantastic show. And I know he was out in L.A., and he did some blues stuff for a while. And it seems right to fit into your wheelhouse. Now, in your bio, it says you're Americana, but I kind of see you kind of a mix of, like, blues and R&B and kind of a little bit of folk and country. I guess that's an umbrella that encompasses all that.
They make you nowadays on Reverb Nation, especially pick a genre.
Yeah.
I'm really in no genre. My Dave Marsh, who was one of the founders of Rolling Stone. I'm sure you know who he is. Dave calls it contemporary rock R&B. And Dave Marsh, when Dave Marsh speaks, he says I'm like Southside Johnny Lyons. You know, contemporary rock R&B. This is what we both do. I mean, I'll do a gospel show. At the Rhythm and Roots Festival this year. I'll do a gospel show at the Americana Festival in Nashville in September, like a roots gospel show. I play blues. you know, my writing tends to be more, you know, guitar driven rock and roll, but you know, I'm also a musicologist. I'm very, very well versed in all these genres for my entire life. I have a huge vinyl record collection, and you know, I'm just sort of known for knowing every song, you know, in every genre. And that's kind of what John and I mean, we're going to have a Delta Blues classic that's going to be one of the opening songs of the show. A Sam Cooke song is going to be one of the opening songs of the show. And we're doing Wade in the Water, which is arguably the sort of Johnny B. Goode of gospel music.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing that. And plus, as I said, we're doing each of our originals, you know. So it's really going to be a very unique show.
It sounds like a great lineup in time. I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
Where are you originally from? Did I see someplace that you had lived here or been around this area?
Well, I went to Boston University.
That's what it was.
That's where I went. I'm born in the Bronx.
Okay.
And grew up in Connecticut, in between Connecticut and the Bronx, really. So, but you know, now my second homes are in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where I spend quite a bit of time every year, and New Orleans, as well as, of course, New York.
Yeah.
So, with my work on NBC. So, I just got back from Europe. You know, I travel around quite a bit, but the South is really. The South is really where my heart is, I have to say.
Would you say that basically you're a combination or influenced by what happens in Memphis and Nashville,
yeah,
and Georgia and Muscle Shoals and maybe even, yeah, a little bit of Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
Did I leave Austin, Texas, too?
Yeah. I'm influenced by all of those. That's why, you know, any review will always talk about the various influences on the writing, even, you know. You can't really pin it down, and you know, really, I think that's a good thing. For instance, I know Jason Isbell, and you know, it's a lot like Jason Isbell. You can't really pin down what Jason Isbell is doing. You know, it's something in between all those things. You know, I'm like dancing between the raindrops, sort of different, you know, genres, I think.
But like a sponge, you're absorbing it all.
Yeah,
in a good way.
You know, and the main thing about me is that I'm a pretty good singer. Everybody would say pretty much.
Yeah, you are a singer, guitarist, and songwriter.
Yeah. I've sung with everybody from Al Green, Bruce Springsteen, you know, right? I've sung with everybody. So, I mean, singing is really where I live. And John is a great singer as well. And that's really what you're going to see here on April 26th at 9 Wallace.
Now, I would say, you know, usually when they're talking a woman like yourself about influence, mm-hmm, they'll probably bring up somebody like Bonnie Raitt or Mavis Staples, yeah, uh-huh, Ruth Brown or Janis, sure, Joplin, but I definitely hear Al Green in there.
Oh yeah, well thank you. Yeah, I don't really make a distinction between men and women.
Yeah.
Bonnie Raitt is a friend of mine, and we exchange deep soul tracks between us, and we often talk about sort of the more obscure women in soul music, a woman named Ruby Johnson,
yeah,
who recorded on Stax. Nobody ever really knew who she was. She's, I think, maybe one of the best singers I've ever heard. Bonnie and I talk about people like her. Mavis Staples also I know, and she's I'm just a huge fan of her. You know, I think when you listen, Michael, to as much stuff as I've listened to over the years, it just kind of seeps in. You seem to understand this, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And definitely Al Green. I mean, the Memphis Sounds, I know the guys in the Bo Keys. I just sat in with Don Bryant a little while ago, who is a wonderful singer. He's married to Ann Peebles, you know. Mm. He wrote I Can't Stand the Rain.
Great tune.
The Memphis Sound is a huge influence on me, yeah. Definitely.
You know, somebody that's been in the music business like yourself for a long time,
yeah,
I can even give it from a local perspective, but I can see it on an international perspective that, you know, I know the landscape of, you know, the records and every, you know, recording industry has changed. I know a lot of people get to a certain point and then, you know, people come along and they want you to be something you're not, they'll say, well, you know, basically during the 70s, like, well, you need to put out a disco hit, or you need to put out the next Cars record or something like that. Are you steeled enough? I guess you're probably at the point where you can, like, say, no, this is my path, and just kind of, you know, put them in their place. Because I just see that it's very tempting. I one Boston band was pulled into the studio, and they were talked into being a pop band, which they were not. They were a punk band.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience in the music business on that?
Oh, that's great. That's a wonderful question. In all the interviews I've ever done, nobody's ever asked me that. That's a great question. Okay, so here's the thing. I think back in the day when there was more money in play than there is now, it was easier for people to try to push a band in a certain direction by dangling money at them. People should know now that there's no money, really. No record company is, you know, giving you an advance. They want you to deliver the finished product to them, basically, and then, you know, so they're not giving you a huge advance. So they may have something to say about what they want, but in my case, you know, that I would be able to. My last record was on numerous top 10 end of the year lists. You know what I mean? So I can't. You know, I couldn't really be pushed around that way. Plus, I love having special guests on the record. And we're making a new record this year, and the guests I have lined up. You know, I mean, the Subdudes are going to cut one track for me. Paul Thorne is going to be on the record. And there's a couple more that I can't even mention yet, you know. So, I mean, possibly Charlie Musselwhite. So, you know, they can't really argue with that. You know what I mean?
Now so, when you do a collaboration, Christine, does it basically kind of basically, if they suggest a change, do you go, wow, that's great, and go with it? Are you open to that type of stuff? Are you looking for that?
The stuff that's on the deep end, really, nobody actually did that. Well, you know, one of the collaboration with Dion is a song called Cry Baby Cry, and that one, we just basically recreated it because nobody ever heard it. It was just not a hit. It was a soul track from the 70s, and nobody had ever really heard it. Very obscure. So we just kind of recreated it because we both loved it so much.
Oh, that's great.
So he didn't really have anything to say because we both agreed. But if he had, of course, I would have gone with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ian Hunter came in and sang on a song.
He just played here.
He knew the song already, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, he just played here. It was a pretty big deal amongst my friends.
Yeah. And then he's going to come back from Europe. He's 80. I sang at his 75th birthday gigs, and he's going to be 80, and I'm going to sing again. It's just amazing to me that he's 80 because he doesn't act like it or look it.
No. How can we freeze-dry us and our age so we don't get older and we can continue to tour and play?
Yeah, I mean, Mavis Staples, I think, is... I'm not sure she is even 80, but she might be more than 80.
Yeah.
But Ian is going to be 80 anyway.
Now, I know, as you know, you're writing your own songs and stuff like that. What is the criteria when you decide to do a cover?
Yeah, so either extremely obscure. The stuff that's been on my records is either stunningly obscure and comes from my vinyl collection, or it's just a song that has touched me in a certain way. My very first record featured a cover of the Troggs, Come On, Let It Go. That's, you know, Come On, Let It Go, whatever it was called. Anyway, and so I just absolutely loved that song, you know. In the new record, I'll let a little bit of information out. The song that we're looking at for Paul Thorne is Poor Side of Town by Johnny Rivers.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be like a semi-acoustic version. And that song just kills me every time I hear it. I mean, it just kills me. The lyrics, the message of it, you know. Welcome back, baby, to the poor side of town. It's a put-down without being a put-down. It's just, I mean, it's a put-down that's cloaked in so much sadness, you know.
Do you think Johnny Rivers was kind of overlooked?
God, yes. In fact, you should know something. I don't know if you know this about the Jazz Festival this year, that Jazz and Heritage Festival, that Jerry Lee Lewis dropped out because he had a small stroke, not a big stroke. The killer, I'm sure, will be back, you know. But Johnny Rivers is going to take his place. He's going to close out one of the stages there, of the two main stages. And Johnny Rivers is hugely underrated as a guitar player, I think, as well as a singer. And I don't know, I'm sure you know who Cal David is. And Cal, I don't know if you know this, but Cal played with Johnny Rivers for years in his band. And his wife, Lori Bono, was the backup singer. I mean, you know, Johnny Rivers is a great guitarist.
Do you think it's because, you know, he was just right before the whole British invasion and kind of in between when the surf thing was happening, and maybe the focus, was on other stuff?
Maybe. I mean, he had huge hits. I mean, his version of Memphis, which is one of the first things he put out, as you know, I just thought was great. But, you know, you're right. It could have been, it probably was viewed as kind of a throwback in a time when people didn't want to hear throwbacks. They wanted to hear British Invasion. But then later on, you know, I mean, I do believe Poor Side of Town is the top. My top track, his version of Baby I Need Your Lovin' is also great, and a great record called Summer Rain.
Now, do you think out of curiosity, do you think his delivery was similar to, say, the Righteous Brothers, where it just kind of hits you in a certain place?
Yes. You know, he's from Baton Rouge, and which is another reason why they're having him at the Jazz Fest. I mean, he'll be a huge success. He's from Baton Rouge, and yeah, he had the, you know, he never went in that swamp. One thing, if you ever see him live, he goes right into a swamp pop thing. He plays a lot of swamp pop live, and he's really great at it. You know, Bobby Charles and things like that. So, but that's a good point. The Righteous Brothers, they put a lot of reverb on his voice.
Yeah.
And also, you know, he did record the records like Poor Side of Town, of course, that was the Wrecking Crew. That was done in L.A.
Yeah.
with the Wrecking Crew. You know, so yeah.
How important to you is production values?
Well, I mean, my co-producer always is Andy York. Andy York is John Mellencamp's musical director, but I've known Andy forever from the New York scene. He's been on all of my records, and he's sort of my co-producer at this point. Andy has a very great ear, and for mixing. We're sort of pre-mixing the stuff, you know. So, I mean, production values are great. We don't use a lot of big, you know, echo on there or anything like that. But you know, one of the great things about the way you record now is that you have access to so many different reverbs and echoes, even as far as a plate reverb sound, you know.
So. Are you doing it more digitally, or are you doing it mostly analog, or a mix of both?
No, we record digitally. Although when the Subdudes do it, Subdudes are going to do the whole track and sing on it as well. I'm not really sure. They're going to record it. Probably three of them live in Fort Collins, Colorado, so it'll probably be done out there, you know?
Yeah. Hey, you know, you were part of SNL Live, and can you give us a little overview of what you've been doing there and what you have done?
Yeah. I was just there Saturday, sang on a jingle called, which was a remake of an 80s track called Ladies, Meet You in the Meeting in the Ladies Room, it was called. The SNL band does all the incidental music for the show, as well as bumpers when, you know, in between the commercial breaks. Hardly ever seen on camera. When I first started, we were seen a lot more when G.E. Smith was the musical director. That's when I entered the band.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are very much in evidence sonically throughout the show. And I also sometimes sing on film parodies that they do.
Okay.
These are short films. And also commercial parodies that they do, which they still do a fair number of. I mean, back in the day, I sang on probably a lot more of those because they were more popular with singing. But, you know, it varies. It really is a very fast-moving show, the way it's put together, right up until the minute that it goes on the air, really. They could be changing things. So you really have to be on top of it. It's totally live. We don't even have a 7-second delay. Lauren Michaels says that it cuts the edge.
That's just like here.
So you literally are, whatever you're seeing is what's happening, you know, and the cast, the crew, the makeup people, the wig people are absolutely the best in the business, you know. There are no better. The wardrobe people, they're changing people so fast. In between those commercial breaks. I mean, it's quite amazing what they do.
Yeah, on a show that's really kind of live. A friend of mine's in the industry in L.A., and I visited him on set. He was on NYPD Blue. And just being on set and see what happens and all the moving parts, and, you know, you say, who makes sense out of all this confusion? And it's like, I think once you do and you get in the flow of it, it really works. And you know.
Well, they have a very good director, and they don't change people. Like, the camera guys have been there forever.
Yeah.
You know, people retire. That's pretty much how they go off that show.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they need people that know what they're doing. This show people don't understand. I don't think it's absolutely live. The number of people that say to me, when do you tape it? We don't tape it.
Yeah.
All right. So what you're seeing is what, you know, now there are reruns, obviously.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, what you're seeing is what's happening.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Now, I would like to talk about you being inducted to the National Blues Hall of Fame and American Heritage. Can you give us a little background on how that went?
This is an organization. They contacted me. I was very moved because I'm not really a blues artist, you know, but although I work with a lot of blues artists, and I have worked over the years, the late Eddie Kirkland, the late Hubert Sumlin, So I really, really was very, very honored. And maybe this is the time to bring in this James Cotton movie. Could we talk about this for a minute?
Sure. Go right in.
Yeah. So in December at the Narrows in Fall River, Massachusetts, we had 2 days of filming, including a sold-out concert, one of the nights, sold out to the walls, in tribute to the late James Cotton. This is for a documentary film called And They All Stood Up, which is going to be finally finished. It was started in 2004. Really, the mover and shaker behind this was James Montgomery, and who was very close to James Cotton,
yes.
Almost like a son to him. So we had people from all, blues people from all around the country, Mark Hummel, Curtis Salgado, Rick Estrin, Cheryl Arena, who was just great. Cheryl was there. Annie Raines, Paul Rischel, Bob Margolin, James and myself. These were all people who knew James to some Cotton to some extent, and or worked with him. There was also a younger cat from the West Coast who I can't remember right now, who I guess had been sort of a protege at the end of James's life.
Mm-hmm.
And because James, you know, just passed away in 2017, and it really, really was something. The first night, they had us in like an unplugged situation. They were revolving cameras around us, and we played unplugged. We played and sang various of James's songs. You know, I mean, it really, the whole thing was really very moving. And again, there I was with these people who really play nothing but the blues, you know,
mm-hmm.
And there I was in the middle of it, you know, really the sort of the, certainly, I know a lot about the blues, and I've worked a lot with people in the blues, but I'm not going out and playing a set that's blues,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was very honored to be asked for that, and as well as to be inducted into this National Blues Hall of Fame. It was quite moving for me, quite moving.
Now, as an established artist, and you said you talked to Bonnie Raitt and different musicians.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What is the urgency of feeling that, you know, as people are starting to pass on, to yeah. shine a spotlight on them using your, you know, your platform, or like, say, Bonnie Raitt or whoever, to shine the light on that, to get the people to know who they are, whether it be through a performance or a film or a documentary or a commentary?
Well, as I said, this is one of the reasons I was so honored to be asked to come in on this thing about James Cotton. Bonnie is, I do think that, you know, and not to take anything away from her magnificence, that the continuing career of Mavis Staples really is owed as much to Jeff Tweedy as it is to anybody, you know.
Mm.
Him coming, making this succession of records with her, you know, she's her, the entire band that surrounds her, you know, are all people, I think, that are just largely interested in keeping her on the scene. And she, of course, wants to be on the scene, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's very important in general. I am a big, I use social media a lot to spotlight tracks. And I also work with an organization called the Sessions Panel, which we go around the world to colleges and do presentations on the music industry. And my part of the presentation is called Roots and Branches. And I talk about every genre and who is the major mover and shaker in that genre, you know. Mm-hmm. Another one is Buddy Guy. You know, Buddy Guy is has a wonderful group of people surrounding him, including my friend Betsy Brown from Memphis, who is his publicist. They are just wonderful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Buddy also wants to be just completely on the scene at his age.
Yeah.
He's not stopping. You know what I mean?
He's got too much energy.
Presentation, yeah. The Roots and Branches. And the website is thesessions.org. There is on that website a whole sort of template that I developed of, if you want to talk about bluegrass, the top person is obviously Bill Monroe, and then it goes down from there. And I have, you know, all these other, the Stanley Brothers, the Delmore, all the, you know, other people in that genre, so that students can go back and look at this. It's hugely important to me. The other person who's really into this, who's also a friend of mine, is Stephen Van Zandt. He has, with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Zane's, Dan Zane's brother, from the
Del Fuegos.
Yeah, he is the head of this. They have a whole curriculum for schools about, you know, who came before us in music.
Yeah, it's definitely a national treasure.
Yeah, Warren Zane.
Warren Zane.
So it has to be. No, it has to be done. And I am hugely into that.
Yeah.
You know, but again, you know, they can only. A very elderly artist can only, you know, continue on the scene if that's what they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it, you know, and Mavis Staples and Buddy Guy, I think, are two incredible examples of that.
I've been trying to shine the light on Genya Raven for a lot of people, and they say, she's great. Mm-hmm. Where's she been? I said, oh, she's been around for a long time, mm-hmm. going back to Goldie and the Gingerbreads, and touring with the Beatles
Genya.
And Stones.
And Genya just put a selfie up on Facebook yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And I think it indicates that she's getting ready to do something. Genya is friends with, do you know who June Millington is from the band Fanny?
Yes, yes.
The Millington sisters. All right, so Genya and June are very good friends, as is Ginger, the drummer. Ginger comes to see me all the time in New York City. There was a tribute to Janis Joplin at Central Park Summer Stage. It's about 20 years ago now, and Genya was on that with me at the time. Phoebe Snow, she's still alive. Genya is extremely interesting.
I know.
But, you know, Genya, I'm not sure how much she wants to do it. See, I think she's kind of liked the idea and then not liked the idea.
Yeah.
And then liked the idea again.
I interviewed her several years ago. Good interview. Yeah. And I guess she's got a book out now, Lollipop Lounge.
Yes.
That's a good read.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, were you listening?
What did she say to you about wanting to keep doing it?
The time, she seemed pretty enthusiastic about still promoting your career and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah. I think she's a very pivotal person, you know, as far as in the rock and roll side of
things. Yeah.
You know, I, for instance, was very interested to see at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions this year. I don't know how you felt about it, but very interested to see the vitriolic response of Susie Quattro, who, in my opinion, does not deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Why she would go on and on and on about how she thinks she deserves to be in it, I just don't think she does.
I think a lot of people get overlooked. I mean, there's lots of people that we all think should be in. I mean, they really had a hound at the Rockabilly woman. I can't think of her name right now. She was out when Elvis, they had her hound, and they embarrassed the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to finally putting her in. Her name escapes me at the moment, but...
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I think, Wanda Jackson.
Yes.
I think that certainly, I'm not taking anything away from Susie Quattro, but I just thought it was, why are you doing this? You know, because she went on and on and on about it. Like, why are you doing this? You know, it's unlikely you're ever going to get voted in. She just was not influential enough.
Yeah.
You know? On the genre, and probably Genya, you know, wasn't either.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, the number of women on the rock and roll side, I mean, not just, you know, obviously you've got your sister Rosetta Tharpe and your Wanda Jackson in rockabilly, you know, and back in the day, Brenda Lee, who absolutely deserved to be in there, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you should have influenced your genre. You know, and changed your genre somewhat. And I just didn't think she, she had done that. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is because when you mentioned Genya's name, then I was reminded of it.
Yeah. I think my feeling is, maybe I'm way off in this, that the person or persons who run the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are thinking more about getting celebrity artists,
yeah,
like Madonna, to get people through the door than the people who really laid the foundation of all the music we listen to today.
In the beginning, they didn't care because in the beginning, they had all these classic people to put in.
Yeah.
You know, now anybody would tell you that they're thinking about filling the Barclay Center. That's right. I played it last time. It was at the Cleveland Public Hall. I played it. I was there, and they had 6,000 screaming Cleveland fans in the balcony. And to me, it really just felt a lot better than a room that is totally filled with industry people.
Yeah.
I personally think they should still have it in Cleveland. That's just me.
Yeah.
At
this time, I have to say, this is, you're listening to WMFO 91.5 FM in Medford, WMFO.org, web streaming. This is Boston Women Rock on Dance Music Express, and we are interviewing Christine Ullman, known as the Beehive Queen. Okay,
yeah.
So there were some other points here. You got landed a top female Americana vocalist
yeah.
honor. Can you elaborate about that a little bit?
I was really surprised to win. When something like that happens, and you don't really know, who's voting for you, how did they vote for you, you don't really know. But it's up there with Paul Thorne and Rodney Crowell. I couldn't argue with that. And again, as I said, I play guitar, but really what I do is sing. And I'm just the most comfortable singing, Michael. It was lovely. It was just a lovely honor. And I don't even know what Americana means anymore. I think it meant a lot more when it sort of first
a blanket genre that everybody can be under the tent.
I think it means there's guitars involved at this point. I think there's so many different people under that umbrella now. I'm not really sure.
I know there's some people that do. With country music now, it's really pop music with, they say, fiddles and banjos. So some people don't want to be associated with that, so they look for another genre label to make it more appealing, maybe?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It makes it sound a little bit more rootsy, First, they also called it roots rock for a while. I almost kind of like that better, because it roots rock could mean that you're influenced by gospel, could mean a lot of things, But Americana is fine with me, too. I mean, as I'll say to these groups when I'm talking to these students, Americana, we did invent the stuff, nobody can argue with that. It may have gone around the world now and been changed, but we invented it.
I'm on YouTube a lot. I'm looking at different music. I book, for my shows, and I pass on bookings to double people at WMFO and WMWM. And
sure, yeah.
Women as guitarists have been really, have been heightened, and the proficiency level is great. And I almost feel like they're getting cheated in a way, because obviously the music industry is kind of limited. I'm not a downgrading, but more toward modern R&B and hip hop and other, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just some stuff that's really knocking me out, whether it be Samantha Fish or whoever, they're just knocking me out. You must come across this, and you must say to yourself, I wish I could, help this person out or shine a light on them.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I think is great about social media. We all know that, YouTube is not really, doesn't really play that nice with Facebook.
Yeah.
They would rather that you made a Facebook video and put it up there. But nevertheless, you share YouTubes, and, they do get enormous numbers of likes on Facebook. So I think that's one great way of doing it. Is to do that. You can't really share, you can only share a minute on Instagram. So I'm not sure, I think Instagram even makes it hard to really share a YouTube, because you'd have to cut it down to a minute. But I do think that that social media is a great way to do that. And yes, the record business as a whole knows that their big money now is in hip hop. It really is. It's in hip hop, and and I think modern country music probably, you know. But that doesn't mean that people aren't on the fringes all the time. You know, also podcasts. You know, podcasts are also a way to talk about artists, feature artists, you know, and as you know, there are tons of those now, you know, that are featuring very specific genres. And, you know, I think that's also a great thing if you want to follow, start following a couple of podcasts. But in general, you know, poking around YouTube is just a great way to find things. It's a great way to find things. Now, YouTube is very intuitive as far as telling you on the side crawl, you know, other things you might want to look at, you know, and you could find some great stuff there. That's also a great question, Michael. Thank you.
You know, being in the business for a long time, and myself to a certain, you know, I'm 66 and, you know, sometimes they have to cut my arm off and count the rings to make sure how old I am.
No, that's...
you know, I was drawn to music as a kid. I mean, obviously, my first... and you're going to get a kick out of this. It was Elvis, actually, and he used to do You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog. But as a kid, I loved hot dogs, so I used to sing You Ain't Nothing But a Hot Dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that famous thing,
As the music has you know, the music landscape has changed and the major labels, and there used to be development deals and, you know. You know, you would get signed for one or three, and then you know, they would stick with you, and everything has changed. I'm not sure if most people know or maybe care what is gone and what is still remaining. My impression might be wrong that there's only like maybe Sony and a few other people that only have maybe a handful of artists that they were going to put money in and promote.
That's right.
We have a lot of local artists that ask me, you know, whether there be somebody like, you know, Ruby Rose Fox or Watts or whatever the local band is, and they seem to hit a certain ceiling. They go, how do we make the next step? The only answer I can give him to him is be an internet star. Am I off on that, or how do they make that next level?
As far as what, people knowing them?
Yes, getting across the nation, out of the New England area, knowing them maybe across the world.
I really think you have to be very judicious in your use of social media and the net. And one thing I would point to people and say is I don't know, you know what SoundCloud is?
Yes.
You know, SoundCloud. Yes. SoundCloud is one way to post a song on Facebook without doing it in what they call a static YouTube. Like my distributor puts all my songs up on YouTube in what are called static YouTube. So it's the picture of the album cover and then just the audio of the song. SoundCloud, as long as you own the master, is another way to do that. And on SoundCloud, you can even put up demos and things if you want people to hear them, you know. It's an interesting way to get people's interest in you. Here's something new I'm doing. You know what I mean? You could listen to it here, you know. Whereas it's harder to put that into a YouTube, obviously. You know, also YouTube videos where, you know, you're sitting down playing guitar or you're sitting down singing and you talk to people. You know, and I, many of the people that I know that are sort of stunningly successful on social media, they use YouTube videos a lot. You know, they engage people with YouTube videos. As in, hey, this morning, you know, I wanted to say, you know, I was listening to Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Wow, she's great. Here's, you know, something a little bit by her, you know, or something like that. You know what I mean? Or here's a new song I just wrote, you know. I mean, so, you know, your fans obviously are going to hear that. And they may share it, and they may show it to other people. So, but you know, the number one way that you really do this is by touring. Getting around the country so that people can see. But you know, it's very, very labor intensive, and there's no money in it.
No, there isn't.
And that's the reason why, you know, a lot of people don't do it. You know, that because you know
they almost approach it like a hobby.
Yes, exactly. But for people to see you live. You know, it's amazing how much that can behoove you. When I first started going down to Muscle Shoals, I went down on my own dime, and, you know, I just sat in with people, and the next thing you know, I'm in a band with David Hood and Spooner Oldham, you know. So, I mean, I could have predicted that would happen, but I took the step of getting on a plane and going down there several times before anything happened.
Being there is, 50% of the investment.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, perspiration versus inspiration, you know, that kind of thing. Same thing with New Orleans. You know, I'm deeply embedded in the scene down there, but it came about because I gave a lot of my time to the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, and they're wonderful people. And, you know, pretty soon I began to make a lot of contacts down there. And every place I go, I'm blessed to be able to play with the absolute top echelon. If I'm in New Orleans, I'm playing with the Radiators, I'm playing with the Subdudes, I'm playing with Mac Rebenack, you know what I mean? So it's not, but that only happened because I went there as a newbie and as a very respectful newbie, you know? So that's the other thing I would say to them. If you have a genre that you really love, and there's a city that's very indicative of that genre, you might want to go there and try to spend some time, you know, wisely. Spend your time wisely. Don't just go there, you know. But I mean, try to meet some people and hang out, you know, and then come back to Massachusetts. You know what I mean? Because it also gives you, you know, I just got back from Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, which you did. So it's a good thing to say as well, you know. I would try to expand my geographic horizon as well.
I have to do like a little PSA in the middle of our interview, if you don't, you don't mind. It's going to be, it's actually a promotion for the station. WMFO DJs, we have to announce this, at WMFO on Saturday, May the 4th. Tune in to hear some of your local favorite local musicians between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. WMFO will be hosting 9 bands and musicians, and that will be on WMFO. Live, you'll hear the Cast Irons, Anthony Kaczynski, Peter Posnick, Daniel Morelia, who's a really good blues artist, and Lisa Bastone, great folk artist. Lily Black, a very nice up-and-coming, great pop. They started when they were 15. They're in college now. They got some stuff going on. 61 Ghost, which has lineage back to Johnny Thunders, and the drummer has played with some of the blues people down south. Will Daly, Flight of Fire, award-winning all-woman band, kicking butt, award-winning, definitely worth checking out, and Subutant. So I just had to do that. And also, all these shows on WMFO are archived for 2 weeks for any of your listeners who want to come back and listen to it. And they just go right to the WMFO page. Thank you, Christine, for letting me do that.
That's wonderful. And I just would like to say about Peter Parsek. So he's this guy. He's a wonderful person. And he's this guy that every day does this thing about whose birthday it is. Have you seen this on social media?
No, I haven't yet. No, I haven't.
Every day he has, today is Buddy Guy's birthday. And then there's a thing about Buddy Guy and a beautiful picture. And it's also, you know, Frank Zappa's birthday.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he's relentless with this. He's every day he's on, you know. That's what I know. I mean, I know Peter Parsek, but if somebody would say to me, who is he? I'd go, he's the guy on social media that does the birthdays every day.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
So that's kind of a cool thing, too. You know,
You know something, I like to instigate things, as people know here on WMFO in the music community. And, you know, Michael Newman and myself have kind of got this going. I'm doing Boston Women Rock. I try to get a lot of artists exposures. An idea I would like to maybe plant in people like yourself that are, you know, have the higher, the bigger stage, the promotion.
Uh-huh.
If is maybe like, I don't know how you would say this, maybe teaching or taking somebody under wing. If maybe when they come to certain areas of the country, especially, you know, college area like this or music communities, if, you know, after they take
mentoring,
you
want to mentor them,
You know, after doing your big gig, maybe take an extra day and do something where you can take these young women under your wing and maybe do something on a college or a stage where they can be exposed with you and you can mentor to them. That's something, a message I would really like to pass, because we really need to keep this going. I know our slice of the pie as far as interest is there because people have all these diversions, Netflix or whatever. That's something I would like to inject. What would be your feeling on that?
Well, yes, and I would like to then spotlight this place in Goshen, Massachusetts, the Institute for the Musical Arts, which is June Millington, all right? And this is nothing but women, okay? They have a barn studio that was designed by John Storick, who designed Electric Ladyland. They do a rock and roll camp for girls every summer with five, two teenage camps, two preteen, and one camp that's nothing but learning how to be a recording engineer. They are all about mentoring women. So, you know, and I'm on their board, Bonnie Raitt is on their board, and Ani DeFranco. So Institute for the Musical Arts, IMA.org. You know, look it up, folks. And if you're thinking of doing something like this, Michael, we should talk to them, too.
We have we have something called Ladies Rock Camp and Girls Rock Camp here to inspire women.
I know you do. Yeah.
You know, I'd love to see that happen.
I don't know about, but I mean, June's, they live there.
Yeah.
So I don't know about these other ones, but in June's case, they live there, and it's out in the woods in Goshen. It's really beautiful.
It's basically Hilken Mancini, who was in some of the Boston bands. I think she was in Fuzzy, one of the 90s bands.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Here's a question I always ask. Is there, during an interview, a question you always wanted to be asked, but you never asked?
No, because you asked like three of them.
That's good. I hope I win a prize, too.
I want to just circle back around and talk about the gig.
I want to recap on the gig, please.
Yeah, so Friday, April 26th, it's coming right up at this wonderful, fairly new club in Beverly called Nine Wallace, which is really a listening room. It's called Nine Wallace because it's at Nine Wallace Street in Beverly. Christine Ullman and Rebel Montez and our special guest John Butcher. So this is really a collaborative night between me and John and the members of the band, which is Cliff Goodwin, Lauren Entress, and Wolf Fernandez. And we will be presenting just American music, some of our originals off of our records, but also, you know, some Sam Cooke, some gospel, some Delta Blues, you know, within the framework of this wonderful room, which is doesn't have a bad seat in the house, they tell me. Every seat is, you know, you feel like you're close to the stage, you know. So it's not a super tiny room, but it's a listening room.
That's great.
You know? So we're really looking forward to this gig in April 26th. And it's the Nine Wallace website, and also John and I have been doing a lot of promotion, John Butcher and I, on our Facebook pages, including our musician pages. Mine is Beehive Queen.
Yes, I could give all your links.
I'm a big beehive hairdo. That's the reason I'm called Beehive Queen.
Yeah.
My last name is spelled O-H-L-M-A-N, but you could just find me as Beehive Queen, you know. And that's coming up in about 10 days from now, and we're really looking forward to it.
That's great. Could you give us all your links and stuff before you go? And any other parting words?
Well, we have a few minutes. Yeah, ChristineUllman.net, ChristineUllman.org, on Facebook, I'm The Beehive Queen, on Instagram, I'm The Beehive Queen, but it has some underscores in the word, you know. I'm at Reverb Nation as Christine Ullman. I'm on YouTube as Christine Ullman. You could find me at Ullman or as I say, the Beehive Queen. And I have a pretty, I have a pretty impressive web presence.
That's definite.
I can easily be found, let's put it that way. Don O'Dell has been kind enough to have me on his show. One, there's lots of great videos that Don did, and we have lots of stuff on YouTube, you know. So my records are available all over the place: iTunes, Amazon, and various other, you know, platforms. So as well as for download, and you know, or you could just purchase the CD. Yeah.
Well, next time you're in town, I hope you can drop by the station and look at all our vinyl collection. We have a pretty extensive vinyl collection. We didn't get rid of it.
I would love that. And I didn't know you did. That's
yes, we
great.
Did. We're one of the stations that held on to their vinyl.
Yes, that's so wonderful. I love it.
And
you're at Tufts.
Yeah, definitely. Right on the Tufts campus here, right?
That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a great station, and basically, it's really, really pro for a college station. You know, some assigned to closets and basements of rec rooms and stuff. So,
I know, yeah. But listen, you asked just some wonderful questions. Like I said, questions I've never been asked. So,
yeah.
That's an art, and you're very good at it, Michael.
One thing before you go, tell the people how important it is to keep in touch, especially with vinyl and records that are not going to be around anymore, and literature and the artists of those times, before you go.
Yeah, again, like I said, I'm part of this thing called the Sessions Panel. It's thesessions.org, and they have a website, and on that website is something called the Roots and Branches, which I've put together. It's got every genre, the big daddy or the big mama of the genre, and then other people that are important historically. It is hugely important to look back if you want to move forward. This is what I tell everyone. You have to know where you came from, you know. So before you can go forward.
Yeah. Sorry, our ID kicked in.
That's okay. All right, Michael.
But it's been a great having you here. And the next DJ on that wanted is Molly. Hi, Molly.
Chatting with Molly.
You want to say hi? We're going to let's.
Christine, this is Molly, chatting with Molly.
Hi, Christine.
Hey, it's baby. How are you?
Interview.
How are you? It's good to talk to you. Yeah.
And good luck with your upcoming gig. Thank you.
Yeah, Molly and I are going to try and get up there on that Friday night, Christine.
Oh, that would be so great. Yeah. 26, come on up and hang with us. Yeah.
That'd be great. And I'm on WMWN Friday night, so if I can, I'll try to give it a shout-out as well on 91.7.
Oh, that would be so great. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice interview. Thank you very much. Michael, you did a good job.
Yeah, not bad for a guy.
I don't say much, Chris. They just let me carry their
equipment.
They're
going to stick me back in the broom closet. Well, thank you again. And we'll keep in touch, and thank you again. And like I said, everybody get up to 9 Wallace on the 26th and see Christine Oman and John Butcher. Thank you again.
All right, Michael. Thanks so much. Rock on, everybody.
Okay, take care.
Bye, Christine.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
WMFO 91.5 Dance Music Express Music Series.
Yeah.
Boston Women Rock on WMFO 91.5 FM Medford.
Yeah. So we're going to be transitioning in a minute to chatting with Molly, and Molly can give us some of her impressions. And for now, we're just going to play a Christine Oman song.
Shadow you.
Yeah, that was Christy Nolman, A Shot of You. Great interview. Thank you, DJ D. Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Bob. And that was really great. And what's coming up on your show today with Chat with Molly?